This is the Weekly Connect podcast from RNIB.
Now, despite what we are told regularly, losing your sight doesn't mean the end of your life. For some, it actually means readjusting to still be able to enjoy the things that you might have done when you had full vision, as well as perhaps learn a few new things. That's definitely the case for Clark Reynolds, who got in touch with us to tell us that he tried to make sure his vision loss doesn't get him down. Well, thank you so much for joining me here on the line, Clark.
That's okay. Nervous.
You're nervous?
Nervous, yeah. It's a proper interview. I've never done a proper interview before.
Oh, it's not a proper interview. It's just me you're talking to. It's just me and I won't tell you how many others. Listen, it's really good to have you here, Clark, and I'm really glad you came on. Because your story interested me because we hear a lot of stories in the news these days of blind and partially sighted people. Usually people who've lost their sight later in life and they go on to do great things. And it's something which always intrigues me because, you know, I was born with a visual impairment and I don't think I've ever done anything particularly extraordinary other than perhaps this job. But, you know, I try to see myself and I kind of want to see myself as you know, just an average Joe guy who's just getting on with his life. But what's interesting is that when people tend to lose their sight later in life, the experience is a little bit different than that. And that's certainly what you've found, isn't it?
Well, it's weird because, as I say, I was born with one bad eye. So, and I've gone through life thinking that it's a disability. So I've, you know, got my driving licence, got my degree, because I do art, you see. So I've got a degree in model making. So, like, highly technical, got to use your eyes for detail, that kind of stuff. So the transfer over to, like, the shock was, I thought I'd lose my sight in my 50s or 60s. And then when I found out 2 years ago that, oh, I've got RP, which I didn't know I had, that was the shock. I was like, oh. And then obviously when I lost my job, because obviously it's a highly detailed profession, I was working as a dental model maker at the time, that was the hardest part. But I say I've always had art in my life. So for me, art has always been a constant because I've had bad kidneys and bad liver. No, I don't drink, I don't smoke, it's just bad luck, really. But I've always had art. So, and now, as I'm going blind, I'll still have the art. I'm hopefully going to set up classes for the visually impaired, do sensory art therapy. That's the plan.
Now, what was interesting about reading your story, and, you know, so people understand, I received a text document from you, actually, which kind of told your story. And it's something which we hope might get published in the RNIB Connect magazine, if it hasn't already, in the next issue. And I certainly hope it does, because I think it'd be interesting for people to read. The reason that I read it was because, and the reason you wrote it, I guess, is because one of the experiences you talked about was getting up there in the sky and jumping out of a perfectly serviceable plane.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I've always wanted to do it before I was 40. I mean, I was terrified of heights, don't like flying. But it was just when you see it on TV or just, you can't explain it until you've done it. It's the most surreal thing, sensory overload, even for someone who can see, should definitely do it. It was so quiet. I mean, lucky we had the perfect weather. There was no wind. It was literally the perfect day. And it was once that parachute was pulled, it was so quiet. But the free fall was the scary part, 125 miles an hour.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Yeah, because obviously in your mind, you want to put your hands out, because that's how you're trained, isn't it? When you fall, trip, you automatically want to put your hand out or grab something.
Yeah.
You know, and you couldn't do that. So your mind obviously plays that trick on you, and then so you panic in a way. I mean, all the air was rushed out of me, and I couldn't breathe, exhale, because of the air that was coming in. So once that initial... it felt like for only about 3 seconds, but I was free falling for a minute. And then the guy literally patted me on the shoulder and then the chute went up and that was it.
Wow. Now, you said you've got RP.
Yeah.
So have you any sight left at all?
So basically, I've got no sight like in my right eye, but I've lived with that for 30 years. And then in the left eye, 2 years ago, just nice, like a black shadow, and it's starting to creep in further now. So it's almost like it's almost bisecting my eye diagonally. So I've got like a black triangle in the far left corner, and it's gradually going that way. So I see, but you know, you have to move your eye around to get that sweet spot in a way. But
yeah,
it's obviously more difficult because obviously with the art thing. So I'm trying to do sensory overload. So for instance, if I was painting an orange, I would like smell the orange, feel the orange, have something playing in the background of someone chopping and squeezing the orange. That's the kind of sensory overload I want to achieve later in my life.
The reason I asked you about that was because I was kind of interested to know what you saw when you were skydiving, because what interests me is you said you were scared of heights for a long time, and you know, I wonder if you would have done this before you lost the majority of your vision. I guess the answer is probably not. You wouldn't have done this before, would you? Because have seen more.
My partner was going to get it for me for my 40th birthday as a present. I've always wanted to do it. So,
do you think she was trying to tell you something? Or
the only reason I had the opportunity was because through the Losing My Sight magazine. If it wasn't for them, I would have done it maybe a couple of years down the line, and I would have had probably less sight than I would have now. So I'm glad I've done it now, where I could still see a bit. Cause basically, how I see is, to people who can see, I explain, when they go underwater, like when they go in a swimming pool and they open their eyes, and they get that blurry fuzziness, and sometimes they get a shard of light streaming through the water and, you know, catching eye. That's how I see 24/7.
Right. Okay. And as the years go by, let's be brutal about it, I guess it's not going to get any better, is it?
No, it's amazing. Like I haven't felt depressed at all. I've kind of like accepted it quite quickly. I said I've joined groups. I play blind cricket for Hampshire and Sussex. I'm starting blind football next Monday. I say I'm part of this group called Losing My Sight, which I did the charity dive for skydive for. And we do activities for working age people. So we've been canoeing, kayaking, sailing, archery, rock climbing. There's plenty of things come up. I think we're going to try and do a Welsh trip next year, where we're going to go on that Snowdonia dip line.
So you're keeping busy.
I've been more busy losing my sight than I had when I had sight. I've had more for social life going blind than I had when I had fully sighted. So, yeah.
Why do you think, you know, whenever we hear about sight loss, and it's interesting because both of us probably have a very different view on the world to others, and that's why I think this is a really interesting conversation, because, you know, I come at it, like I say, from the point of view of always having a condition. You've come at it from losing your sight over time, but yet both of us haven't sunk into depression. And that's not to say that nobody else will or is, and it's not to say that that's wrong to feel that way or anything like that, but it's interesting, isn't it, that some of us don't go down that route. Why do you think that is with you? Is it your nature, do you think? Is it just the way you look at
it
life?
It could be, because obviously I had bad kidneys when I was in my early teens, so I left school. I had to leave school due to medical reasons. I was 15 at the time, and scary time. We rushed up to hospital up in London, 15-year-old kid. That's just a little sense from that, really, just that positive attitude from there. So I fought back, basically. I had no GCSEs. I had an A in art, and I fought back to get an MPQ, a diploma, and a Bachelor of Honours art degree. So, all the knockbacks I've always had in my life through health problems has made me stronger.
I think that's what a lot of people forget, isn't it? That, you know, when someone... let's be honest, when people hear about the thought of losing sight, they panic, they worry. You know, people who have perfect sight worry about it, they fear sight loss. And I guess what we all try to say is, you know, it's not something to fear. It's an adjustment like anything else in life. It's not the greatest experience on earth. Nobody wants it. I don't want to live like this. I'm sure you don't want to live like that. What else can we do?
You just have to adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain things that obviously, I'm a huge film fan, so I haven't been to the cinema since I was diagnosed, because I just didn't like that audio description and the screen. So for me, that was the biggest hurdle I had to overcome. And now taking in audio description on TV and stuff, so I'm just getting used to that now. That's the only thing. And it wasn't most annoying. I used to read a lot. I used to read like 8 books at a time, and so I've got the audio books I get from the RNIB library, which is great, and you know, I like all that, but it's not the same as looking at a page and like taking it in your mind.
And that is the bits that sometimes great, isn't it? It's those things that you think about and you say, well, I used to do this. Mm. I can now do that. I mean, I can read and you can read and, you know, but we're doing it by audio. We're listening.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fine. But like you say, it's not the same. It's not the same thing. It is difficult when we talk about sight loss because everybody's got a different experience of it. There are some people, I've met blind people who just don't care. They tell me, you know, I don't care, I'm blind, so what? Some people cannot get over it at all. And I think it's acknowledging that in a sense, isn't it? Because, you know, we hear charities talk about it in such a negative way sometimes. And I think it's important that we try and say, well, yeah, okay, it is difficult, but not to use a pun, but sometimes there is a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and that light at the end of the tunnel can be things you've found that you might not have done before.
No, but I mean, what I found, with, you know, at my age, I mean, mid-30s, is I think sight loss, unless you've got that long cane, which I just had only 2 months ago. Before that, I just had the simple cane, and people just didn't pay attention at all. And even with the long cane, people still try and play chicken with you on the pavement. I think. And, you know, in a busy place. And I think I think it's an invisible disease or condition or disability, how you want to call it. And it's just sometimes, I know RNIB did that, the advert the other day with different sight losses on the TV, which is really good. But I just feel, you know, when you go, for instance, when we go to London on the Underground, you don't see any posters saying, you know, we're a bloke with a white cane or, you know, something like that, and people fully sighted. Say, you know, because that's the worst. I think London is oblivious to people with blind conditions. I think,
I think they're oblivious to each other as well. In some ways, I think that might just be a London thing. But it's interesting. I wonder what your thoughts are on acceptance of sight loss, and I think that's a very dangerous word in some ways because, you know. As I say, I've had this condition since day one, and yet I still feel I'm accepting it every day. Is it about, though, a bit more than that? Is it about, in some ways, not just accepting it, but actually, in some respects, just letting it be and realising that, you know, instead of getting frustrated about not being able to read, you know, start listening to audiobooks. Instead of being frustrated about not being able to watch TV and movies, accept that there's audio description, that there are ways round it, and it might not be perfect, but, you know, the world isn't perfect in some ways, and, you know, we have to adjust to what's available, and there is a lot more available today in 2017 than there was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years
ago. I mean, I'm not techno-minded, but there is obviously a lot of technology around there for people. I mean, I still have my independence, I still go out on my own, and we've got this great bus routes where we are, which is great, and they're getting the new buses now, but there has to be mandatory, so the bus stops. Where, you know, it'll tell you. But I have a good memory, which always helps. But I mean, obviously, the other downers is obviously I've got a 3.5-year-old daughter, and you know, I tried to explain her that Belle's got bad eyes and tried to change her and things like that. She has to keep still. But the worst thing as well is she's just been diagnosed with cerebral palsy. So that's a massive thing on my shoulders as well. I suppose my partner, because my partner's got to look after my daughter as well as worry about me when I'm going out.
No.
And I try to tell her, you know, I can do it. I just think she worries too much. She worries for the both of us, which, I try not to think about it, in fairness. If I thought about it, maybe that's when the depression would kick in more.
Yeah, I suppose that was my next question. Do you have down days? Do you have just moments where you just think, oh?
It's been horrible the last 7 months because we were evicted from our property up in Kent, a landlord sold the property. So I moved down with my mum in Portsmouth. You know, help the support from the family as I knew would need it, you know, with me losing my sight. And obviously, I know there's a housing crisis, don't get me wrong, but we've had no support from any of the councils at all. We've had a key worker, and apparently, my disability and my daughter's disability is not a worthy cause for them to prioritise us on housing. So, But lucky enough, I've just had a friend whose their houses came up for rental, and we're going to move in next month. But we've all been living in one room for the last 8 months, which has been quite traumatic.
Mm. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, some of people like to sort of put sight loss in a box, but, you know, sight loss comes with friends, and, you know, those friends can be the other things in your life that go on. I mean, like you say, your daughter, your housing situation, all these other things, real life that goes on round about it, that you have to cope with. And, you know, you have down days, but not always necessarily attached to the sight loss, but it can play a part. It's everything. But you've pushed past, and that's the interesting thing. And I think that I know there are people who are listening right now who perhaps have never even made it over the front door. And it's trying to say to that person, if you're listening, it is doable.
It's out there. I mean, look, I mean, obviously every place, they must have a local sight loss group. I mean, that's literally, I moved down in March, and I was really proactive. I found a group called Open Sight, and from Open Sight, I met Dave, who runs the charity, the local charity. And then from there, I got on the cricket, and I say, all my friends now are sight impaired. And, you know, I have no sighted friends. All my friends are blind. You know, that's how it's come, and I don't mind. You know, and they're good friends, you know? Yeah.
Don't push back. Don't push back. Is that your message?
That's it. You know, you can still do things. I mean, you can't, I mean, you don't have to jump out of a plane, for instance, but you can get out there, like, try activities. If you're not sporty, you can go on walks with other people, with guides, you know. If you want to take up running, there's local places that would have guide runners that you would join with, you know. There's lots of things around there. You've just got to be proactive, and I'm sure, I know it's a postcode lottery and everyone hasn't got the best services depending on where they live, but I'm sure every county has a sight loss charity organisation that's not R&IB, but, you know, that you can get out. Or if not, if there is nothing in your area, then start one. You know, my friend Dave Taylor, he was a security guard. He started doing his sight, and within 8 months, he got a registered charity sponsored, you know, got the run by the National Lottery. He got a grant from them as well. So it can be done.
Yeah. But I must say, though, jumping out of that plane must have been fun.
Hey, well, I mean, I wouldn't do it again. I mean, I've done it now.
No, that's it.
It's just the initial tumble, and then you're gliding down, which is lovely, and then you hear pop, and then you're coming up. But it was, I mean, there is, for the people that can see slightly, I am on YouTube. Just put in Clark Reynolds, skydiving, and I'm obviously the first link on there. And you'll see the whole 10 minutes. So there's an interview at the start saying about the charity, me going up in the plane, me coming out of the plane, and me landing. Yeah.
Oh, sounds great. It sounds great, but also terrifying, and I'll probably never do it. But I'll happily watch you doing it. Just a brief note on your work you're doing now, because I think this is quite interesting, and it follows on from your career. You've taken that as a positive as well, even though your career you couldn't continue. You're trying to help others get into this world of, is it just art generally, is it model making?
I mean, so I can, once I start moved and settled, I'm going to go through the British Arts Council for a grant, and that will help me get these workshops up and running. So basically, I think I like visual. Like, even though I can't see, I still like painting. I've always done painting and stuff like that. So, you know, like when chefs, when they do those funky menus, and they use that dry ice, and they have a perfume in it to enhance the flavour of the food, because you have that smell.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of theory. So, for instance, if we were doing the still life, so like an orange. So we would have an orange. Everyone would taste that orange. Everyone would feel the orange. And then I would have some Foley sounds, which is basically sounds that enhance through movies. So someone of chopping an orange, squeezing an orange. And we would have the whole atmosphere. And then a little spray, like a little canister of like perfume, we can get the like orange essence, and I'll spray it just in front of their face so they can smell that intensity of the orange. And then I'll ask them, you know, what if they've never known a colour before, what colours, you know, what would that represent, like, of an orange? What feelings that make? And then we get the orange in, and we just splatter. We'll have these balls, and we'll splatter the paint and create abstract art through sensory overload. So, I think art is a great therapy. I mean, for all the, you know, not just for sight loss, but I think for, and you look at any disability, and obviously they do it in prison as well. And I know the army people with sight loss, they run an art class up in Brighton for veterans, blind veterans. They do.
Well, it sounds amazing. I can't wait to hear the rest of your story, because I think there's more to come from you on this.
Yeah.
Clark, really good to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming onto the programme.
That's okay. Thank you.
Thanks for downloading the Weekly Connect podcast from RNIB. Find more podcasts from RNIB on Audioboom, iTunes, and the Apple Podcast app.